Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoSilicast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, July 9th, 2006, and this is show number 51. Well, several people wrote in asking me whether I own birds. I was really confused by this until I remembered that last week I recorded my podcast from my bedroom with the windows open because it was so hot around here last weekend. It's funny, though, I couldn't hear the birds through my headphones at all, even though I had them set on monitor, so I decided to play you a little bit of what my backyard sounds like. Sometimes I think we have an aviary back there. Anyway, I was glad to hear that you guys were wondering about my birds and had to answer that question for you. I want to talk about something important to start off the podcast. I've met some wonderful people in my life that have really touched me, but I never expected that I would get to know people only virtually through the internet who would make an impact on me as well. These are people that I may never meet in person, but who actually touch me deeply sometimes. These friendships sometimes develop over time, repeated contact, but sometimes they just jump out in front of you. Somebody's just kind to you and does something that really touches you. One such instant kind of friendship actually happened yesterday. I have to give you some background to tell you how it came about. Tim Verporten runs the Mac Review Cast, which is a fabulous podcast hosted over at surfbits.com. It's intended primarily for switchers. He talks about switching a lot, but he's got a lot of great shareware and freeware that he reviews, an amazing number of them that he gets through. And he also has a couple of folks that are regulars on his show. There's a guy named Jeff Powell who joins the cast frequently, and he provides great software reviews. And I think he does book reviews as well. He's also joined by a guy named Robert Pritchett, who writes an online magazine called The Mac Companion. And you can check out that magazine over at maccompanion.com. There's two C's in that. And it's now celebrating its four-year anniversary. Well, you might wonder what Mac ReviewCast has to do with making friends. Well, Tim has been very responsive to my request for advice and help on my podcast, and his accessibility and kindness has really been great for me. In talking to him, he has mentioned several times how wonderful of a person Robert Pritchett is. Tim recently encouraged me to sign up for the contest they were running at the Mac ReviewCast. They were giving away literally thousands of dollars worth of books and software that were donated to them by suppliers. I couldn't resist that temptation, so I joined in the fun. I listened to the list of things that were being given away, and while there were many, many excellent prizes, there was one that just really lit me up. It was a book from McGraw-Hill called How to Do Everything with Photoshop Elements 4. Man, I was thinking I'd love to win that prize. I'll probably win something goofy, but that would be really cool if I got that. Imagine my surprise when yesterday I got an email from Robert Pritchett telling me that I won that very book. My sentiments about having instant friends has nothing to do with winning a prize. I mean, that was fun, but it's what happened next that really kind of threw me for a loop. I wrote back to Robert to tell him how excited I was about winning the exact book I was hoping for, and he wrote back and said, "I actually prayed before we started that those who won one of the gifts could really use them. My prayers were answered." Wow, what a kind, thoughtful person. Here he is helping to give away thousands of dollars in prizes. He cares enough to pray that people win what they want. I was simply floored by his response. I guess I got a small glimpse of what Tim has been trying to tell me about what a great guy Robert is. I decided it was high time I check out the Mac Companion I'd heard so much about, so I headed over to maccompanion.com and started reading this great online magazine. I got to tell you, I've been paying for Mac Addict and Macworld for a long time, quite a few years, and I've been getting really frustrated with them. I stopped Macworld altogether because they were just too happy joy-joy about Apple. They could do no wrong. And while MacAddict still has its irreverent attitude, it's been frustrating me because it's getting thinner and thinner. I'm thinking it's like 30 pages of actual content these days. So I go over to Mac Companion. Here's a 136-page monthly magazine right there for free. No ads, 136 pages of really, really interesting content. I really encourage you to go check out this great online free resource at maccompanion.com. You may remember a few months ago, I highlighted an effort called One Red Paperclip. The idea was that this guy named Kyle decided he was going to trade one red paperclip for a house. Foolish, you say? Well, he's been trading up for nearly a year. piece after piece, and when I had last checked in, he had traded up to 1 year's worth of rent at an apartment in Arizona. Today I was just thinking, I wonder how Kyle's coming along with his endeavor, and it turns out that just 3 days from now, on the anniversary of the beginning of his quest on July 12th, he will take possession of an 1,100-square-foot house at 503 Main Street in Kipling in Saskatchewan, Canada. I read the last few entries on how he got there, and it's hilarious reading. You've really got to go check this out at oneredpaperclip.com. A few trades back, I'll give you a little of the more recent history, but a few trades back, he had gained an afternoon with Alice Cooper. Didn't follow how he ended up with that, but he traded it to a guy for a motorized Kiss snow globe. While some might think this was trading down, he pointed out that it was a variable speed motorized Kiss snow globe. It turns out the actor Corbin Burnson is a fanatical snow globe collector, so he traded Kyle a speaking role in his next movie for the snow globe. Finally, the town of Kipling offered Kyle $200 in Kipling cash, the key to the town of Kipling, honorary mayorship of Kipling for 1 day, honorary lifelong citizen of the town of Kipling, and they're going to build the world's largest red paperclip in dedication to Kyle and his project. Needless to say, Kyle is going to accept Kipling's offer, and he's inviting everyone in the world, to his housewarming party on Labor Day weekend, September 1 to 4 of this year. I love this on so many levels, not just for the amazing idea and execution, but also for his fabulous writing style. I guarantee you'll enjoy reading his adventure over at oneredpaperclip.com. I'm kind of sad that he's done. I'm wondering what he's going to do next. Hope he comes up with another great idea to keep us entertained. Last week, I did a review of the cool Iris Previews tool that works with Safari, Firefox, and IE on the Macintosh. It's a function that gives you a quick pop-up preview of the link you hover over instead of actually having to click and load sites when you're not sure whether it's really what you want. I mentioned in my review that while I got it to work in Safari, I couldn't get it to work in Firefox. Listener Margaret wrote in and said it did work for her, so I figured I was just looking at the problem wrong. I noodled on it for a bit using a technique that I've really perfected. That is, when you can't figure something out, just walk away. Sometimes it just fixes it by itself, which is really cool, but in this case, it just kind of came to me. I thought maybe it's actually an extension in Firefox, since Firefox has extensions. To review, the way you get to it is inside Firefox, pull down the Tools menu, and go to Extensions. A little window is going to pop up, and then choose Get More Extensions. That takes you over to the Mozilla site, where you can do a search for the extension you're looking for. So I searched on Cool Iris, and sure enough, there was an extension right there. I clicked Install on the extension, restarted Firefox, and voila! Now I have Cool Iris Previews in Firefox as well. I do find that in Safari it's much faster than it is in Firefox, not quite sure why, but I seem to have to wait quite a while for the previews to come up in Firefox. I threw away Internet Explorer a while ago, I mean, who wouldn't, and so I can't really test it in there. Anywho, thanks for the motivation to find the solution, Margaret. Now I can have this cool device in two of my main browsers. I did write over to Phil at Cool Iris, asking him whether they have any plans for the Camino browser, which is my current favorite. And even though they don't have plans for it, I've got to give them their chops for having support for three browsers already. That's pretty good. Before I forget, one thing I didn't tell you about last week was that Cool Iris supports RSS, which means if you go over to my RSS feed, which is at podfeet.com/nosillacast, that's with a capital N and a capital C, which was a big mistake. Anyway, podfeet.com/nosillacast/rss.xml, and you do that in Safari, which has an automatic screen reader, you can hover over the links in the RSS feed, and you'll see the pop-up preview right from there. This is such a cool little tool. I can't get enough of it. Check it out at cooliris.com. Quality control director Steve is behind in his work and just pointed out this week a really funny mistake I made 2 weeks ago. When I was talking about one of the planetary applications I was testing, I referred to Neptune as a tiny planet. And evidently I'm a teeny bit incorrect there. It's sort of like the third largest planet. I guess I was thinking of Pluto, Steve, and I do always appreciate it when you keep track of the facts I'm messing up and are right there to point it out. Let's talk about rebates. I've got some really practical advice for this audience, and it's on the subject of rebates. I know it's really tempting to look at the Fry's ad and see that you can get a 42-inch plasma display for $14 after rebates, but I have to caution you that this doesn't always work quite like you thought it would. Some people have suggested, as in Research Department Niraj, that I'm obsessed with metrics and statistics. But only when you measure things can you make a valid assumption about what the root causes of things really are. For example, I've been writing down my gas mileage for 28 years now, and I know one of these days that's going to come in handy. I did try to stop recently, but after 3 weeks it made me crazy, so I'm back in the game. I'm sure I'm going to need it. Wait a minute. I was talking about rebates, wasn't I? I get off track easily. Anyway, I started recording my rebates when I started noticing about 4 years ago that I didn't always get as much money back as I thought I should. But I couldn't really prove it, so I wanted to find a pattern to figure out when it worked and when it didn't, because I knew I got rebates sometimes, but what was the distinctive factor in those? Well, I do most of my shopping over at CompUSA. I'm actually considering having my checks direct deposited right to them to save the middleman. And they frequently have rebate programs on Sunday mornings, where the rebate is the same as the purchase price, so your product is free. So you look over there and you get one of those dusting things for free, the air dusters, if you just turn in all the rebates on it. So back in 2001, I started a spreadsheet where I recorded the date I sent in the rebate, what it was for, what vendor, along with the amount of money I was expecting to get. I also calculated when I should expect the rebate based on the information they gave me, which is traditionally 6 to 8 weeks, 8 to 10 weeks. And then when I do get the money back, I record exactly when I got it and how much I was paid. I also include the website they tell me to check to see the progress of my rebates. Over the past 5.5 years, I have sent in $1,145 worth of rebates, and I've received $1,051 back, or a 92% return rate on my submittals. As an average, that's not bad, but I've been improving my return rate year over year, where for the last 2.5 years, I've hit 100% returns on my rebates. How did I do that, you ask? It's easy. I now only do rebates that are from the manufacturer. For example, if a company like HP or Nikon or Adobe has a rebate, and it doesn't matter where you go to buy it to get the rebate, you are going to get your bounty back sooner than they say, and you'll get it back 100% of the time. I can say that with 4.5 years of evidence, 47 rebates, and I'm confident because the one time I didn't get the rebate back, it happened to be from Amazon on a $100 rebate for an iBook. I happened to notice that the date that I calculated that I should get the money back had passed, and passed by quite a few months by the time I noticed it. So I shot an email to the address they told me to send to, and they wrote promptly back asking for copies of my submission, which of course I kept, and I got a check in about a week. I mean, it was pretty amazing. I'm not saying they don't ever screw up, but when you're dealing with a real company that wants you to do business with them in the future, then I think you're going to get your money. This lesson is only useful if I explain the kinds of rebates where it's a crapshoot to get your money back. The first one to avoid is the one where the website says, wheresmyrebate.com. I'm pretty convinced that this is a scam. I sent in 4 rebates to them in 2001, and only one was paid out. I did one of them in 2002, and that one was paid out. I also have no faith in Fry's rebates, or Fry's as a store at all, but don't get me started on that, or we'll be here all day with me ranting. Their rebates simply don't come back at all. Sometimes their rebate come back saying something like denied, with no explanation and no way to write back to them at all. I'm really anal, as you might have noticed. I keep all my records, I keep the photocopies, I read every line item of when it's due and the whole thing, so I know that it's really who I'm doing the rebates through that makes a difference. In 2004, I made a decision to do only the rebates from real companies, and my return rate has now been 100% for those last 2.5 years. I really encourage you to avoid the 100% rebate deals, unless you have nothing better to do and need a hobby. Learn from my mistakes and stick with the big manufacturer's rebates. One more bit of advice. Really look into your own psyche before you even do the big manufacturer's rebates on the big products. Know yourself. Know whether you'll really do the rebate thing or not. I read in the Wall Street Journal recently that TiVo actually had better than expected earnings one quarter because so many people did not do the $50 rebate from that Christmas season. I enjoyed the article because while I have a TiVo, I did do my rebate and I already had my $50 back by the time the article came out. It's okay to not do rebates. Just know yourself when you buy things. Realize what you will and won't do. Look at the price without the rebate and make sure you're willing to pay full price for them if you're not really going to do the rebate. All right, enough lessons. I want to talk a little bit about the site upgrade I've done. If you only listen to the show, you probably don't care what podfeet.com looks like. But since a ton of people actually only read the No Silicast and don't listen, I spent some time this last holiday weekend straightening things up a bit. My site is controlled by WordPress, which is a content management system. What that means in plain language is that I type stuff in and it ends up formatted really nice and readable. I write the blog posts and WordPress creates the archives, gives the search capability, and basically keeps things in order. One thing I've wanted to do for a long time is make the site wider because since I'm so verbose, everything I write ends up being 60 miles long. I thought this would be easy. I thought I'd figure out how many pixels wide it is, look for a number like that in WordPress admin, and change it to be wider. Not so easy as it turns out. I tried that and boy, you should have seen what a mess I made of it. My friend Tim Rossi did the work for me. He actually figured it out. The code is actually in what's called Cascading Style Sheets, or CSS, and I did get myself a little book so I can start to teach myself. But before I got a chance to really start doing a lot of that, Tim did it for me. And the cool thing was he didn't just fix it and then run away. He actually put in tons of comments in the code to show me what the changes do. So I was able to go in and read those comments and start to understand how the different pieces work together. Luckily, a few things were still horked up, not quite the way I liked it, so I got to fix them up myself. I had a lot of fun working on this. Another thing I wanted to do was change the way my pages work in the sidebar. Pages are the static links on the right side, not dynamic content like the blog itself over on the left. I wrote most of it ages ago, and like most static websites, it was woefully out of date. For example, I had a My Favorite Gadgets link that I didn't even have listed the MacBook Pro. I also had a listing of all the shareware and freeware I had reviewed so far, but it was so hard to keep it up to date that I decided to bail on that because I wasn't keeping it up to date anyway. I put a lot of work into it, so I didn't want to just trash it, so I had to do a ton of reading and researching on the WordPress help pages, and I finally found a little command called exclude, where I could exclude a page and not actually have to erase it. I don't like to throw things away that I've spent a lot of time on. Finally, I had a section for my favorite podcast, which was also out of date. There's a thing in WordPress called categories, and for each category, you can create a bunch of links and descriptions of the links. I named a category podcasts, and I added in my current favorites along with my own description. I think this will be easier to keep up to date than the old way, so check out the list of my favorite podcasts down there on the bottom right and look for some good content over there. Finally, and probably the most important thing I did, was to get a spam filter running on my blog. I don't know if I was keeping ahead of it enough so that you didn't notice it, but I was getting some pretty nasty spam going on in the comments on the blog and spending about 10 minutes a day cleaning it up. I found a tool called Akismet, A-K-I-S-M-E-T, which is freeware for non-commercial use from akismet.com. Immediately, Akismet started catching spam. It had caught 111 of them in the first 4 days alone, so I'm a huge fan. If you've been offended by any of the spam on my blog, you'll be happy to know that the spam should stop now. This was a real good case of where something didn't work, and I went away and tried to think about it, and when I came back, it just started working. Putting Akismet on a blog, turns out you have to get a WordPress API key, whatever the heck that is. And when I requested it, I kind of messed up and I put in the wrong email address and attached it to this blog. And then I couldn't put in the right one and I couldn't fix it. And I couldn't figure out how to download it. I couldn't figure out how to install it. I was going back and forth, didn't know what to do. Just kind of let it rest for a couple of days. And when I looked back, there was Akismet just running happily away in the background, deleting spam right and left. Very cool. I do recommend that as a technical technique for you. Just walk away and maybe it'll just fix itself. Anyway, the final goal on my blog is to get some more buttons working on the site. Like, I'd really like to have a PayPal button, because I know you've all been clamoring for that, looking for just some way to donate to the No Silly Cast. But anyway, the last time I tried to do it, somehow I kind of turned my search button into a PayPal button. I didn't mean to do that. But, you know, now that I think about it, not a bad idea. You're searching and you accidentally have to pay me. That would be cool. Anyway, keep your eyes out for more changes. We'll see what else I can figure out how to do. If you don't have web access on your cell phone, but sometimes you just want to find something in your local area, like a pizza parlor in your zip code, Google has an interesting solution using SMS text messaging. My buddy Ron tipped me off to this capability at google.com/SMS. The way it works is you store Google's phone number, which is 46645, or G-O-O-G-L, and instead of calling the number, send a text message to 46645, like, pizza 10003, and SMS will send you back a listing of pizza parlors in New York City. It's not the best at formatting the information, so it might split the answer across several messages. I think there must be a length limit on SMS that causes this. You can also use Google SMS to get driving directions, check the weather, get stock quotes, even look up definitions and do translations. One of my favorite things to use Google for is to do unit conversions, and Google SMS can do that too. This is a great way to get access to the web without paying for data services. Check out all the options at google.com/SMS. Well, I'm not a big old font freak like some people, but this site from my buddy Ron is pretty darn cool. This site has 9,800 free fonts that work for both Windows and OS X. The website is spelled Creamundo, that's C-R-E-A-M-U-N-D-O. Maybe it's Creamundo? I'm not sure. Creamundo.com. It has, like I said, it has 9,800 free fonts. You can type in a phrase to see how each font look, and it's just, I mean, amazing. I mean, 9,800 fonts, that's a lot of fonts. That's a gazillion fonts. I tested it first in OS X, dragging the downloaded TrueType font into my local user's font folder. That worked just great. In Windows, though, I'm kind of impaired, so it took me a while to figure out how to add a new font. I went to the Help menu, and I thought that might tell me, but in the top 15 things that Help returned when I write font, two of them were about piracy. In fact, the top two were about piracy. Can you believe that? How paranoid are they? Anyway, I kept searching in the Help files, and I finally figured out that you open the Fonts Control Panel, and then under File, choose Add New Font, and navigate to the folder where you downloaded the font. Anyway, that's a bunch of detail on how to add them, but my point was that creamundo.com has 9,800 cool fonts that you can use in both operating systems. Go have fun. If you get in there, you might even find a font that only uses elephants to make the letters. A lot of great fonts in there. There's a lot of nifty sites out there with beautiful photos to look at, but usually they don't have high-resolution versions for them that you can use as desktop backgrounds. My friend Linda turned me on to a site that does give you high-res photos, sized perfectly to be a desktop background. They give them to you at 640 by 480, 800 by 600, and 1024 by 768. The site is called breathtaking-photos.com. They have the background sorted into seven categories. They have tropical islands, water lily and rose, brilliant flowers, landscape 1 and 2, forests and foliage, and animals. Head on over to breathtakingphotos.com and enjoy some really beautiful high-resolution photos for your desktop. I'm not a big music listener, as you know. I only listen to technology geek podcasts, but I know those folks out there who do have more than one dimension of their personality. I just don't happen to be one of them. I don't know if you've ever tried AOL radio before, but it's pretty cool. And it actually includes at least some of the XM radio shows. I'm not quite sure why we're allowed to listen to XM for free, but we can. AOL Radio can be launched using an AOL Messenger account. You don't need the real AOL. And if you go to the website music.aol.com, you can play AOL Radio from within your browser if you're on Windows. But you can also download a player that works for both Windows and Mac. Now, I'm saying that from reading the website, but they're both in theory true, but didn't actually work out in practice for me. I found AOL Radio for the Mac in a couple of places, one of which is from Apple at apple.com/downloads. If you go to apple.com/downloads, just enter AOL Radio in the search box, and the first hit will be for the software. Download and enjoy. For Windows, I went back to music.aol.com, and I tried to play music using the built-in player, but it didn't like my pop-up blocker. Okay, well, that's fair enough. So I unblocked pop-ups for AOL, and I tried again. It popped up a nice ad, but then it gave me an error saying that AOL Media Playback Control is not responding properly, and then it took me to a page for the steps to reinstall the software. Oh, come on. I used to think the only reason I preferred Macs was because I didn't know what I was missing in Windows, but if this is the kind of slop people put up with all the time, I can see why people switch. There were actually 8 steps, which included running an executable, ignoring the action canceled message, saving a file, closing all applications, running the file, and then they even said to not worry when your mouse turns into an hourglass. Then it tells you what to do if you get a message saying that the file is corrupt. I won't keep reading this to you. It's just too annoying, but you get the picture. Let's just not forget that I wasn't even trying to load an application. I was just trying to play it in the browser. I also tried to find the player to download, and I located it over at Softpedia. At least in theory, I found it. I found a page with that title with some buttons that referred to downloading, but none of them actually took me to a place to actually do a download. Well, this didn't really start out to be a rant, so I'm going to get off of my soapbox about Windows. I was meaning to tell you about how cool AOL Radio is, so let's just focus on the Mac application for now. First of all, it's a universal application, so it's nice and responsive. Launch the application, which is called AOL featuring XM, and at the top it will say you are not connected to AOL Radio, and there will be a button that says Sign On. Click on that button and enter your AIM screen name and password. You can add it to your keychain if you like, so you don't have to enter it the next time you go in. Now you'll see a list of sources in the left column, which include XM Satellite Radio, Alternative, Christian, Classics, Classical, Decades, News, Sports, and many other sources of content. Select one of these sources, and then in the right column, you'll see all of the available stations within that source. Since the big news is that they have XM Radio, I selected that as my source, and then I could see stations for the decades from the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, plus about another 15 stations. When a new song starts playing, a cool translucent window hovers for a few seconds, giving you the song's name and artist. That's really pretty. Once you find some stations you like, you can then attach them to 5 separate preset buttons by selecting controls from the menu bar and then pulling down to store stations playing on and select one of the 5 presets. After that, you can just click on any of the 5 presets to jump between your favorite stations. Would have been better if they had a few more than 5 presets, but the functionality does work really well. I found that the sound quality in AOL Radio varied quite a bit, with the highest quality recordings over under Classical. The recordings there were done at 128 kilobits per second, and in contrast, the 80s hits under XM Radio were actually encoded at 16 kilobits per second. It was worse than AM radio. So I'd keep an eye on what the bit rate is that they're showing you, and that'll tell you how good it's going to sound. Or I suppose you could use your ears. I know there's a lot of applications that can do streaming radio, which is what AOL Radio really is, but I think they've done it very well, and if you've been wanting to get XM Radio for free, but you were too cheap to actually go out and buy it and wanted it for free, or maybe you wanted to check it out first before you actually pay for it in your car, here's a great way to do it. If you missed the fireworks for Independence Day in the United States, or simply just love fireworks, there's a cute little freeware application called, it's a Mac screensaver called Skyrocket that will give you one last taste of the fireworks. It comes with sound effects, which are cool at first, but really got on my nerves after a while. Anyway, you can find it at macupdate.com and just do a search for Skyrocket, which is all one word. In searching for Skyrocket, for the link for Skyrocket, I came across a site with a bunch of really slick screensavers for the Mac. Actually, for the Mac, Linux, and Windows. And the website for this is reallyslick.com. All of the screensavers for Windows are zipped up in one file, which is handy. And for the Mac and Linux, you have to choose which ones you want. I've got my eye on one called Plasma. That's got to be cool. Anyway, check it out over at reallyslick.com. Walter Mossberg of the Wall Street Journal did a review this week of a really inventive tool to help with malicious software on Windows. Traditional virus detection software and adware spyware blockers work by trying to keep bad things from coming in and cleaning them up when they get through anyway. And all of them work with limited success, and your computer really is at the mercy of your own bad habits, because we all go clicking mercilessly around on the internet. Oh, we all do it. Don't pretend you haven't clicked on something that was just too tempting. You know you have. Anyway, Green Border Pro from greenborder.com takes an entirely different approach. It works with Internet Explorer and isolates the browser from the rest of the computer without bothering you while you surf. Inside the Green Border, the browser runs fine, but it simply won't allow the browser to install any software on your computer. And the border keeps the browser from being able to see into the rest of your computing environment. Even if some hinky stuff gets through, when you quit your browser, anything that got downloaded simply disappears along with the virtual session you were in. If you find yourself in trouble while you're browsing, you can clean and reset Green Border and you're in good shape again. The example Walter talked about was, what if you get browser hijacked? That's where a hijacker decides what your homepage will be. Normally, this is really hard, nearly impossible to get rid of, but in Green Border, you just hit reset and it goes back to the way it's supposed to be. One of Walter's pet peeves is software and operating systems that intrude on you all the time to remind you that you're working. During the D-conference, he likened it to, what if the cops knocked on your door late at night with a thief in handcuffs and said, "Hey, we just found this guy trying to steal your car. What do you want us to do with him? You want us to quarantine him? Delete him? What would you like?" Anyway, Green Border Pro met Walter's standards by simply putting a visual green border around the browser to show you that it was hard at work. If you choose to download something, it puts it in a protected folder on your disk with its own green border around it and runs in a protected session just like your browser. Walter tested Green Border Pro on a couple of machines he knew to be clean and deliberately went to all the little nasty places, and no matter what he did, the machine was clean afterwards. Green Border Pro did report that it had blocked dozens of attempted file changes and hundreds of attempted changes to the Windows registry. Green Border is $50 per year, even though you don't need updates like spyware or virus definitions, and it still is a yearly fee, but that still seems pretty good for what kind of protection you can buy with it. If you'd like to read Walter's entire column on this or other subjects, check out his site at ptech.wsj.com. That's ptech.wsj.com. The article in Green Border was on July 6th in his personal technology column. I really love reading Walter's work, so head on over there and check out a great site. Well, looks like that's going to wrap it up for the this week of the NoSillaCast. Please keep all your great feedback coming. I just love to hear from you. Write to me at allison@podfeet.com, or you can leave me an audio recording now at nosillacast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and stay subscribed.